Ah, good afternoon. Come in, come in. Let me offer you a glass of sherry, a tale or two, and perhaps one of my priceless antiques.
Tales of Antiquity. Stories of the romantic past captured through the eyes and ears of Eustace Glean, collector extraordinary. His story for today,
The Philanthropist. Your sherry. Feel free to wander if you wish. Ah, but I see you're intrigued with that magnificent table clock by John Ellicott. Late 18th century, you know. It belonged to a Mr. William Makepeace. A rather interesting story attached to Mr. Makepeace. Let me tell you about it. William Makepeace was born in the quiet Gloucestershire town of Market Snelling. The son of a grocer, he was given a modest education at the local grammar school, after which he assisted his father in the shop that he was later to inherit. It was in the 1890s that Mr. William Makepeace became the owner of a pleasant little house, a modestly flourishing grocery shop, a horse and trap, and £2,000. However, at the age of 41, William was still a bachelor. But he remedied this within a year of his father's death by marrying Mary Wilco, some 10 years his junior. Nevertheless, William was not happy. He yearned for the big city, London, where he and Mary had spent their honeymoon. He therefore sold the house, the shop, the horse and trap, and took himself and his wife to London, where he purchased a house in Bethnal Green. But William was no match for the artful Londoner and was constantly put upon, much to Mary's chagrin, who was ever trying to convince him that
there's some people, William, without an ounce of goodness in them.
It was a fine spring evening in the year 1894, and William and Mary were preparing for an early night, for Mary was to take the 9:30 from Paddington the following morning. She was to spend a few days with her sister at Wells. However, Mary was not happy at the thought of leaving her husband to look after the shop alone, since he had once again been put upon.
Oh, come now, Mary. It was merely a threepenny piece.
If I were to put together all the threepenny pieces you've allowed yourself to be swindled out of...
Well, no doubt the poor little chap was in more need of it than ourselves.
Oh, William, you're such a fool.
What time does your train arrive tomorrow?
We reach Wells at 12 o'clock, and it'll be on time. The Great Western is a most punctual line. Now, when you've done with the clock,
it's done.
Good. Then put out the gas lamps and come to bed.
The following morning, William accompanied his wife to Paddington Station, fussing around her like a mother hen.
Now, my dear, you will be comfortable.
Yes, yes, William. I'm well tucked away in this corner seat. I have my book, my knitting, and if I should become bored, I can look at the scenery. Very pretty this time of year. Now, don't fuss.
Very well, then.
Mary then went on to caution William about giving away threepenny pieces to thieving urchins, or soon they would have no business at all. Reminded him that he was to collect her the following Thursday, and that he'd best have some breakfast in the buffet room before returning to the shop. At length, it was time for the train to pull out. As the 9:30 chugged away, William was left standing forlornly on the platform. He dutifully made his way to the buffet room, where he was to make the acquaintance of a Mrs. Sidney Lutler.
There we are, sir. A new sweet cup and a poet pie. A threepence, thank you.
Excuse me, Gaffer. You couldn't spare a copper for another one of them, could you?
Yes, by all means. Miss, another tea, if you will.
How very kind of you, I'm sure.
Nasty cough you've got there.
It comes from staying out in all weathers, you know.
Here we are, then. For you, is it? I'd keep an eye on him if I were you, sir. A penny, Tom.
You mind your own business, you old faggot.
You mind who you're calling a faggot, Sid Lutner.
Yeah.
Mark my words, sir. Watch this one. He'll like as not end up in the nick, and you with him. You're not careful.
Yeah.
A cuckoo, is it, sir? A right to be?
Hello, that's better. Marvellous, ain't it, how some people like to mind everybody else's business? Nosy old toad.
She doesn't appear to like you.
I know Molly Kemp since she come down here from Edinburgh 35 years ago. She don't change.
My name's William Makepeace, by the way.
I just call us Sid. Everybody else does.
Sid, what's your line of business?
You name it, Gov. Anything I can get my hands on to. Only I'm a bit down on my luck right now. Thanks for the tea, Mr. Makepeace. Very kind of you.
No, wait a moment. I think I may be able to help.
And he did help him, employing him in his shop all day, stacking up, running errands, and generally making himself useful, much to the misgivings of Mrs. Porter, housekeeper to the Makepeace household, who observed darkly,
"Dunno what Mrs. Makepeace is going to say about encouraging down and outs."
But William was impervious to this and all other entreaties to watch himself with that one, even providing a bed for him that night.
Now, Sidney, do you think you'd be comfortable on the sofa?
Oh, sleep like a lord here. Better than underneath the arches any day. what time do you say this Mrs. Thing gets here in the morning?
Mrs. Porter usually arrives about 6:30 to prepare the shop and generally gets on with her tools. So you'd best be up and dressed by then.
Oh, don't you worry about a thing. You get off to bed. I'll be up in time to let her in.
However, the following morning, Mrs. Porter had to rap quite hard and long at the glass-fronted shop door to gain entry, and then by William himself, who was somewhat out of sorts that Sidney had not been up and about in time as he promised. But then, perhaps the poor fellow had overslept. One must be charitable, for the poor chap wasn't used to sleeping so comfortably, albeit on the parlour sofa. But when he and Mrs. Porter went through to the back parlour...
There's no sign of the fellow.
Not only that, there's something else, too. You noticed? The place don't sound right, if you know what I mean.
Sound? Oh, the clock must have stopped.
Stopped? It ain't stopped, Mr. Makepeace. It's gold. Look at that big gap on the mantelpiece.
Oh, good heavens, he's taken my father's clock.
When Mary Makepeace learned of this devastating piece of news upon her return from Wells, she displayed no sympathy whatsoever, merely stating that she had warned him on countless occasions. Even the fact that the clock was over 100 years old and belonged to William's father, she still remained unmoved. And so, the weeks passed, with barely a day passing without William giving a miserable sigh at the gaping hole on the mantelpiece. And then, one day during lunch, Mrs. Porter rushed in with the post, agog with excitement.
"On Her Majesty's service, from Wandsworth. Wouldn't be surprised if it walked from the prison. Here you are, Mr. Bakeley."
And sure enough, it was from Wandsworth prison. And what's more, from Sidney Lutner himself.
"Not that rogue who robbed you. What does he want?"
"Mrs. Porter, you'd best return to the shop before we have anything else stolen."
And Mrs. Porter scuttled back to the shop as William read out the letter. It simply stated that Sidney was serving a 6-month sentence, that he was filled with remorse for the manner in which he had repaid such beneficence, that he sought an opportunity to personally ask forgiveness if only William would visit him. Mary was, naturally, against the idea, but William had already made up his mind. Upon seeing Sidney over several visits, he learnt that he'd given himself up, or so Sidney told him, and that he wished to start afresh. William was most impressed, especially when he offered to restore to him his father's clock once he had done with Wandsworth. so impressed with the fellow's sincerity was William that he agreed to meet him upon the morning of his release. Mary was, once again, not over keen at the prospect.
Are you completely out of your mind, William?
I don't think so, my dear. Pass me that carton of baking powder. Sidney has asked for help.
I can imagine the kind of help he's looking for.
Mary, you've never met the fellow. You don't know what you... Please don't stack the tins like that. They're liable to... Time and again, I've asked you not to stack things top-heavy.
Oh, then do your own stacking.
Whereupon, she further announced that he need not expect her to form part of the welcoming committee when he brought the villain home, for she meant to spend the next few weeks with her family. And furthermore, that he need not come running to her when the fellow had completely fleeced him. And so, upon the morning of Sidney's release, William was dutifully waiting for him outside the gates. But on the way back to the shop, Sidney confessed to him.
Look, Mr. Makepeace, I don't know how you ought to trust me anymore. I've got this weakness, see. I only got to see something to go for, and Bob's your uncle, it's gone.
Oh, you mean you're something of a kleptomaniac, is that it?
Oh, thieving's what I calls it.
Now, look, Sidney, I want you to understand that there's someone in the world who trusts you, is prepared to give you a second chance.
If you really want to improve
yourself, then simply return to me the clock you borrowed last time, and we shall say no more about the matter.
Well, I have to go and see this maid of mine and get things sorted out.
And sure enough, that very night, Sidney went to see his friend about the return of William's clock. It was around 10 o'clock when Sidney and his friend arrived back at the shop, but the visit turned out to be a little less than William had anticipated.
Ah, so this is your friend, is it? Well, do come in.
You bet, mate. I see. The door.
What on earth?
I see. Shine a pops.
Pops? Whatever do you... Sidney, what are you doing with those pistols?
Just do as you're told, mate, or you might just find out. Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Makepeace, but I did
never warn mind him. About all that. Shove him in the back room and let's get things moving.
As for Mary, she'd been too miserable away from her foolish, trusting, kind-hearted William and had decided to catch the milk train back to London. Arriving before the reliable Mrs. Porter had time to open the shop, Mary let herself in and made her way through to the back. To her dismay, she discovered poor William in the middle of the floor, bound hand and foot, and with a gag in his mouth. Hurriedly, she released him, needing no explanation as to what had taken place.
Sidney Luttner, I take it.
He brought a friend.
Oh, William, what am I going to do with you? Oh, no matter. I shall go and fetch the police.
No, Mary.
What?
That fellow's only just been released from prison. I cannot be responsible for putting him back again.
But look at the place. It's been ransacked.
What price a few possessions, my dear? That poor creature has sold his soul. His reward shall come, but not at my hand.
Oh.
And a few months later...
Well, I reckon Mr. Makepeace has learnt his lesson this time.
You think so, Mrs. Porter?
Oh, Mary, my dear, I'd like you to meet a friend of mine, Mr. Billy Casper.
You see what I mean, Mrs. Porter?
Come and sit down, Billy. Do you smoke? I've an excellent mixture here. Mrs. Porter, pass me my tobacco jar.
Luckily, there are quite a few William Makepeaces in the world. It sort of evens things out, doesn't it? Would you like the clock? Take it, as a reminder that many a fool might lose his estate before discovering his folly. Good afternoon. Do drop in again when you're passing.
That was Tales of Antiquity, with Valerie Dunlop, Linda Stewart, James White, and Dennis Falbig. Written and produced by Kenneth Hendel.